Billy left.
And why don't we go to the third line down, which is the pulmonary artery shoulder.
One that shows minus on this decision, and I'm just going to put that in, but for others, you see that for some of the.
If you look at the other areas, pulmonary artery is a 13 million.
Correct.
Now, that project right now, there was just a scope on that, and when they did the programming, they added some additional items to that. So we're in the process of revisiting the scope and reducing some of it, bringing that back along. So next time you see that figure will be adjusted. And we're also reconciling, I think we mentioned at the last meeting, through our strategic execution plan, we're reconciling the budgets to the overall amount of money that each college has.
None of this could have added up.
Yes, and this is already, yes, and there are some accompanying slides that I think we're going to get to later on in the agenda. Just going to show you the reconciliation.
And I know this is helpful for all of us, because in the past, we weren't necessarily defining deficiencies. So this, you've read numbers, you asking questions, and the president's asking questions, they get people's attention, and that's how you actually balance things out. And this is part of our strategic execution plan and the exercises that we've gone through in order to balance the budget out.
Do you have a question here, somebody else?
Yes.
Does anybody, this scan means or the distribution of production that is part of the forum. Does anybody have any other questions about some behaviors in this document?
I believe that you asked for an explanation with respect to Pearson.
She said to explain.
Oh,
okay.
You can do it now. I mean, it could be another thing.
Okay. Yeah, we want to. We'll get to it. We have one of the five slides for the people to show the cash flow for the campuses, and then also explain it on those.
I have one question about West LA College. Just explain one question. Are you sure that the page follows the plan? Now, if you look at the first line, it's a little red triangle. At the end of that line, there's an explanation at the bottom that this is the end date per prior month schedule. And I can accept that, but it's going to be another prior month estimate. And as I look at this thing, there really isn't much of it. There's nothing past on the end of the last box on the chart is green, it's not blue.
Well, actually, the dark green box means it's been closed out. So the project is completed, but we're in the financial
process. Very, very important. What we're doing here is more than just bricks and
throughout the district to create a conducive, positive learning environment. In fact, converting is shaped by facilities. Environments both in the classroom, the laboratory, outside, the space between buildings, all can be considered learning environments. Places where students can engage. And what we're trying to do throughout the construction is not just provide, as Mr. O'Reilly would put it, world-class facilities, but also create an environment where students will take more classes, slow down the commuter experience, engage in campus life, get connected to the resources that are at each college, and have a high rate of success. We have found that when our students come to us, very well prepared academically, they actually do pretty well. College-ready students do well at LACCB. When they do not come in college-ready, the rates are disproportionate. It varies. It varies by college, by zip code, and frankly, that's simply not satisfactory to us. So we're trying to better understand why that occurs. Trying to provide an academic space that is conducive to learning. And first and foremost, begin, I believe, to attract, hire, nurture, and develop excellent faculty for those classrooms and those classroom environments. And I'll share more in the report, but we're making a significant investment in that. But let me simply say that it's wonderful to have you here. I understand the role that each of you play, the role of your particular committee. You provide us a public accountability that we desire, your views, perspectives, always welcome, and we want to make sure that we're upholding the public's trust as well as sharing the resources that we can have the most impact on the success of the students in the community as that. So let me simply thank you for your time. So I'll share a few more particulars about the district that we might have. Thank you.
Do we
approve
this?
We have a
internal control. So what you look at is what they say they do and do they do it. not to be affected by this code. Do I have that right?
No.
Okay.
You look at those, we don't give an opinion in our profession, it's actually a fear on control. We don't, we're not giving an opinion, you're required to have a fear on control.
Yes.
We give a report on control, and that is what the science says.
That's what I tried to say.
Yes.
Okay, and that is the standard.
Standard.
Such orders.
Standard, the only people that are required to have audits of internal control actually in our public companies at this point. Organizations receive federal awards, like the district itself, we will get internal control, we report on them, we don't give them. So, we really have two instances that can make a lot of people, unless they want, they're very costly. So, we don't have to get, they don't have to. Shall I do it? Okay, well, thank you so much, you have been in the delightful lunch. I have two lunches, it's delicious. And thank you so much for having sat in our last meeting on the group. Sure, we're going to be back for our pizza meals, and I think we've got that a little time to come.
Do you think I need the microphone? You're recording it, okay, good to know. I'm sorry that I'm here alone today. I did not do this audit alone. It takes an army to do all this. Erica Albert, who you met last year, the director on the account, when the date changed, she had a conflict, so she didn't make it. I have another manager that helps me on the financial statement side, which is the part I think you have the least amount of questions or concerns about. So let me just reiterate what Jim said. We actually do two separate audits, and that is in addition to the third audit we do for the district financial statements. So the first audit is a financial statement audit of the expenditures of each of the programs. So we do them one by one. You have the report. We bind them all together, but we do them separately. And combined, that was an audit of approximately $274 million of expenditures for the year ending June 30th, 2014. And what we're auditing for, of course, is proper accounting and disclosures of those expenditures, that they're in accordance with U.S. generally accepted accounting principles, that they meet the criteria of the bond program, that the expenditures are made on approved and documented projects, campuses, project lists, if you will, that they're in accordance with LACCD's cost principles, your own published cost principles that were established several years ago, and that they reconcile to the financial statements of the district. So that also helps us picture by doing all three of those audits, by being able to pull that all together. The performance audit is really focused on understanding the effectiveness and the efficiencies of the processes, the administration, if you will, of those funds. So we generally look at things that we think will impact efficiency, effectiveness, or money. And we agree with management at the beginning of every year what things we are going to look at from that perspective. And certainly in construction, we know that the estimating and the budget process, if that's not done properly, that could cause loss of funds or effectiveness or efficiencies. Processing of change orders and field orders, if not done properly and properly approved, et cetera, that could cause us more money than we had intended. Scheduling, the process of scheduling could also cause delays and costs if those aren't scheduled properly. So this year, the areas we selected were the cost estimating and the budget process, the change order process. We decided not to revisit scheduling. There were improvements and we had responses from the prior year. We again also looked at more bond expenditures, even more than we look at the financial statement side, because this is more compliance. And we do what we think is necessary. And we looked at approximately 1,600 expenditures of the combined $274 million program. And we also were asked to look at the strategic execution plan to understand if it was appropriate and reasonable and all of that. So hopefully you've all had a chance to review the report. If you'd like, I can walk through the format of the report, or I can just address questions after I highlight some of the key points. Let me highlight some key points, and then perhaps we can decide whether you just want me to show you how it's formatted or just respond to questions. So as a result of our financial statement audit, we did identify an investment and a deficiency in controls that we have discussed with management, and that frankly is just an accounting matter. It doesn't impact the efficiency or the effectiveness of the program, but since I'm talking about the program, I thought it was important to share that with you. Excuse me. For the performance audit, Again, we looked at the cost estimating process, the budgeting process for projects that are in process and those that are, that haven't yet begun. And what we found is that AECOM Build did put together a dashboard over the prior year, year and a half perhaps, that actually captures all the budget and data information so that management can make a decision. But what we found lacking in that process and that we think is important are really robust controls over what goes in, when it goes in, who reviews it before it goes in, how is the process performed, documented policies and procedures. Not to say that we didn't get what we asked for, but it didn't seem as though some of it was prepared contemporaneously, or if it was, it wasn't in all one place. Lead you to believe, how could somebody have analyzed it if it wasn't all in one place until we asked for it? So that's not to say that once we did ask for it, we found anything wrong with it. But that is basically our comment, and we found that to be significant, that that is the key area in a program, is managing your budget, your estimating process. So we highlighted that, and there are some examples in the report. Yes, so we would see that there was a budget put together and there was an estimate to complete put together, if you will, and no detailed supporting documentation as to how they got there.
In the document you look at or in the document you compiled?
Not all. Nothing is absolute. So we sampled. Sometimes it was, sometimes it wasn't. And so when we asked for it, it was provided again. So it's not as though it didn't exist to our knowledge. I think we ultimately received everything that we requested.
Okay,
I guess I'm having a hard time.
Was there ever a case where the justification you were looking for, the rationale behind the number, could not be produced? Any of the cases you asked for?
We received everything we asked for. So there was no indication that it wasn't performed. However, one of the questions we had is, was it reviewed by somebody? How do you know it was prepared properly? How did it get to you to be able to make a decision as to how much money you have for, you know, the remainder of the program? So, and for some of the estimates of the whole budget, we said, well, how did you get from this point, from the last point? And so that was a robust process around documenting what changed to the budget. All of a sudden, we just changed. So those were our comments, and those are what you will see included herein. And it's really process and policy oriented, and I've been saying that for 3 years. It all comes down to that. Policies, expectations, accountability. So,
is the process starting to change, or is this an ongoing problem? We just don't seem to be able to get our hands around it.
And I'll let Terry put the icing on the cake here, but what I can tell you, and I think we shared this in our past presentations, was when we initially took over this program, that was, I would say, looked at Terry or looked at Tracy for concurrence, one of the greatest weaknesses on this particular program. The policies and procedures, clear, effective, are the foundation of any large program. You have to have the rules from which to manage by. And we did not find those when we initially took over. Since then, we have put together a very robust package of policies and procedures that are all online. Anybody can use them, you can see how they're done. They're updated regularly. In fact, if we see a weakness in one of the processes or the procedures, it could be immediately updated to make it more effective. And we have done that in several cases, which we've expanded upon. And in fact, from some of Tracy's suggestions, in fact, we've made some of them more robust. So I would say that currently I'm very pleased with the policies and procedures and where we are. That doesn't mean they're not going to get changed, they're not going to get better. It's all about continuous improvement. So if we see any holes in these, we're going to keep working towards it. With that, I'll turn it over to Terry.
How much time was there between the audit and talking about it?
About 6 months, yeah.
We issued it in December.
It's from June to June, so there's been about 6 months. So we talked about the strategic execution plan earlier. When we started to embark on that process, we discovered that there was some lacking documentation on how people arrived to the budgets and the EACs on projects. So in parallel to doing that plan, we also developed a new process on creating the EACs. And what Tracy was talking about earlier, that the documentation necessarily wasn't there. It was just a play-by-play process on how one would get there. So now we have that, it's posted online, and it's been established, and it's something that we've implemented. I can hear you.
And we saw something about that in your last presentation.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I should have started with the timeline originally. I tell you, this is as of June 30th. I didn't want to do the boring stuff, but it's actually really important. I think this is the fourth presentation, the fourth committee or board that we presented it to, with the final issuance date of December 3rd this year. So we're just delighted and very appreciative of all the help from Jim and his team, Terry and her team, to be able to get it done. We actually couldn't get it done earlier, but the board meeting was December 3rd, and most people work towards deadlines, so we were actually ready. I think we were all ready several weeks before that, so we're going to continue to do that. The other thing I wanted to mention is, this is the fourth time that we've performed this audit. So what we're finding now is we hit most of the campuses in the first three rounds. So what we found when we went back this time and looked at some processes over the top across campuses is that our error rate in every area was lower, which means a new campus we hit, they might have not fully implemented what suggestions were made to prior campuses, but prior campuses we visited, it was clear that they had embraced or had addressed, not all of them, but our error rate was so much lower, for example, in change orders. And so there is progress, and the problem with some of these audits and the reporting is by the time you hear it, you're already halfway into the next year, and then you get the finding again. So sometimes it takes a couple of years to clear those up. But I wanted to comment on that, and our report does as well, that we definitely saw improvement in areas. So the next area that we actually had a comment, the only other comment was in the change order, field order process. The project has policies and procedures and forms, et cetera, that are supposed to be filled out and approvals that are supposed to be obtained before anything changes or occurs, and that wasn't always followed. So that is what we test towards, to your point. What are your controls? Are your controls effective? Or are they designed properly, and then are they operating effectively? So when we tested to their own controls, we found missing forms, perhaps, timing differences in when it was approved and when a project started. We did determine that afterwards they were all approved, they were all appropriate, but that was luck, right? So what we would hope for is that it happens on the front end, consistently, constantly, and again, that was an area where we saw significant improvement, but we did still see more instances of that. And again, if a campus is using a form that is outdated and that's not the policy, we probably made a comment on that. So you might, may or may not find that relevant, right? What I would be more concerned about is, are we doing things before they're approved? In whatever form you do that, that would be what I would focus on if I was on this. So the other area we looked at, the bond expenditures, the compliance, as I mentioned, with the cost principles, with the project lists, with the Prop 39. Again, 1600 to 1700 if I include what we did on the other side. We did not find any expenditures that we felt were inappropriately charged to the bond program. And I do want to say we did sample. Yeah, it's $274 million. I can't off the top of my head, I'm sorry, remember the value of the sampling that we did. But that is a lot of sample sizes, I can assure you of that. We don't normally do that. And so I say bravo. You know, the nuts and the bolts, the processing, the approval, the documentation before anything is paid seems to be functioning effectively. And the last thing we looked at was the strategic execution plan, as I mentioned. It was an overview. It led us to look at the SOPs. Standard operating procedures. And that's where we also identify that I believe they've addressed, as Terry mentioned, how to make them more specific. It had observations about you need to get the budget in, and you need to do that, but not step by step. We were relying, I think, on the experience and the professionalism of the CMs at the various campuses, and you know, everybody needs training, everybody needs guidance, everybody needs a framework. So when we looked at those operating procedures, that's kind of what it jumped out at us for that process, and I believe it was also a few other processes that they just need to be more robust.
That was amongst your recommendations.
Yes, that is, it's kind of embedded. It didn't have its own title, it's just that we kept running into it. So you'll see that in a couple of sections where we referred to that and said, yes, they have them, great progress, more robust, more framework, more direction. And really, the whole issue is accountability, right? If you don't tell people what the rule is, it's really hard to hold them accountable. And that's my report. Happy to address any, oh, you have one, right away.
I do have a question. So I know that in the issue of recommendations that are expected to accrue in the listing process.
Yes.
My understanding is that there were expenditures attributed to one of the three separate bondholders, both for the first and second, or for the witness, so assigned to the cost. And that KPMG made a recommendation that a bondholder accounts payable to them, whether it be useful in that area. Is that a recommendation that's going forward, or is that?
We are actually converting to a new tool as we speak.
And that particular issue impacted not the performance audit, but the other one, the financial statements themselves. General ledger. Did we miss that one? Apologies. If I can make just one more comment, that we have already discussed some preliminary discussions about what we will be looking at in next year's audit, and certainly the budget is at the top of the list, making sure that we know where we stand in every area, and management has had a chance to review that, know where they stand, so they can continue to spend the funds appropriately.
When you say budget, we're getting close to the end of the program, and so part of projects, on the board, you know that your sub-master plan is a certain project that you're funding. You're going to be looking at the budget on whether or not you want to
that would be a separate project, right? What we would say is, have you accumulated enough information that's properly supported and processed to even make that decision as to what you're going to do with the remaining funds? It's probably more important now than it ever was because of your work.
Right. Okay. And that's something that was obviously a great concern. The last thing, no matter how well this program went, how well we get a shot, if we somehow get to a half-built building and run out of money, all of our hard work is there. It's sort of good. Well, we have, once again, going back to policy procedures, means for our strategic execution plan, we made these dollar shows for they're unable to start a project until they finish the project, so the money's always going to be there. And I'm not talking about slowing down the progress. What we're saying is we're being highly cautious about it, because as you know, a project always goes sideways. So it's a unless there was anything that had fallen out, but we haven't started anything that would have fallen back. That's kind of what we're shooting for, Elliot, at this point in time. Now, I believe that we are going to have some lagging at the end. I don't think we're all going to be able to go home and, you know, put a bow on it at the end of 2018. Some of the big projects that we have yet to let will probably continue to go on. We still have some design, but the vast majority will be, not all, will be under contract. Yes, sir, everything will be under contract. Dan, would you like me to move on to the construction update?
Yes, I'll do that.
For those of you who haven't attended before, the construction update, I used to just go through and give a lot of blue skies and rainbows and puppies and kittens and tell everybody how wonderful things were. These guys demanded that I pick up all the dirt, and they want to see what's really the bad stuff that's happening, the top projects. And so what we typically do is a little bit, well, go through and hit some of the highlights, maybe the exciting things that have happened to the program since the last time we met, and then we'll get into some of the more nasty, dirty projects and give an update on those. We have a couple of them on the placeholders just because they're terrible projects, and we're just trying to dig our way out of them. So with that, I'll start going through here. We'll typically start off just with the big numbers, kind of macro discussion, and work our way down into some more of the details. Currently, on our program of the $6.2 billion, we have $5 billion under contract. Yes? It's just... We have $1.2 billion remaining to be contracted. And we have already spent $4.4 billion. We have completed 215 of 381 planned projects and 588 of 807 sub-projects. Currently in construction, we have 43 projects that are ongoing and 48 sub-projects associated with those. In design are 32 projects and 43 sub-projects. And that comprises the program, if you will. A few of the large...
Everything that we have budgeted for now in the basement, where there's still projects out there that there's funding available for government services, and that's a good question.
We've got a couple things, because as we go through here, you'll see that we're going out for design right now. And so, but they're all in motion.
It's in programming.
Yeah.
All right. So we really have a good handle now on the projects we're going to build by the end of the program.
Yes, we're in.
And that's, you'll often hear me say, you know, that's what success looks like. I mean, these are the projects that we said we're going to build and then we are going to build. And that wasn't always there. I think it was a little cloudy to most people what they were actually going to get at the end of this program. But I believe it's much more clear now. A couple of procurements that I want to mention on the large ones will be the demolition of the Firestone building. That's a massive several million square feet old Firestone building down in Southgate. We're going to take it all down, and then we're going to build another building, another 100,000 square foot new building on top of it, which will relieve a rented building, an old grocery store that we use for a facility now, and we'll be able to put all those students, we've already got a captive audience in there, and move them right over to the new campus. And it also allows for some growth in there as well. So that's pretty exciting. It's going to be one of the biggest projects left remaining. And the demolition of it is going to be quite an expense in itself. It's could be somewhere $20 to $30 million just to demo it. Predominantly, that cost is probably going to go into taking out all the bad stuff. It's full of nasty stuff. And we want to get in there and take it down and get going on it. In addition, and shortly following after that, we'll be putting the actual design on the street for that structure and then looking for the general contractor. We'll bring the gentleman early to do somewhat of a design assist on it through a lease back. So we'll do a professional services contract with him first to assist the designer and then continue on the design. Another large project that we're going out for once again on design, and this is the biggest project left at Trade Cape campus, is the Culinary Arts Building. We received in the initial interest of the SOQ 26 responses from designers. Doesn't mean they're all good, but we're going to shortlist that number down to 5, and then we'll have them compete.
Shortlisted to 5, and then you do what?
Then they'll do
Negotiation on each individual offer.
Yeah, it'll be more at the point in time, then you get into the actual interviews. So they'll be bringing in their ideas, you'll look at their project team, you'll look at their planning and their approach, the numbers.
I've only 26 responded to an RFQ.
RFQ, yeah. So we're just thinking, we don't want to waste their time with RFQ, we want just calls, yeah. Yep. Mission College, the last thing they have to complete that is not in the contract is the central plant. They desperately need it. We finally believe that we have a size, we have agreement with all the stakeholders, and we're moving forward on that. The RFQ was issued on January 22nd. Proposals will be due on March 3rd, and then we'll award those, take it to the board in April. Southwest here, there's an MTA transit center. This is gonna be a design bid build because we have to use federal funding, so it kind of prevents us from using more exotic delivery models. And this one will be going out March 4th. Valley College, there's still a lot of work to do out there and some big money. We will be building we talked at one time about a MAPA building, a medium performing arts building. It's very large, $80 million or so. We proposed to the board asked us to go back and put even more flexibility into that building so that they can hold more classes, so it's not completely dedicated just to media and performing arts. Now, in fact, we're actually going to remove one of the theaters and put in more of almost a lecture hall type of thing. The president is pretty excited about this because in some of those classes, you can teach a larger class with still only using one instructor, which makes money. So, but it's going to be a much more flexible model with many more programs in it as opposed to spending all that money on just one group. And we're now calling it the BAC instead of MAPA. They also have a central plant upgrade out there, and we've already had a kickoff, and we're going to award the contract in July. And then district-wide, we're going to go renew our OSIN, our owner controlled insurance program. Something that we've had on the program since then. I'll go through, quickly give you the good news so we can get into the bad news.
Yes, I can just ask one question about what you said. I'm not asking for a prediction, I'm asking for an estimate. Okay, and that is, when do you think the last award, the date by which the last award of the building that's going to be built will occur?
The last award will probably be this year, maybe early next year. Right now, you're gonna see some slides on this. All the work will be primarily completed in the end of 2018, so we're working backwards from there. You'll see some activity in slide.
So we'll be under contract. This is gonna be a really big year for, we're pushing contracts out the door. It already started like that. We're a month in and we've been putting them on the street. We spoke with the general contracting community and the design community a little bit about where their limits were. Because the last thing you want to do is to kind of flush everybody where they can get picky. And they're only gonna look at one or two, and we want them to look at all of them. So we've been keeping in touch with the industry with regards to how much they can handle. And because the less amount of competition will oftentimes result in a higher price. This is a big deal, and in Boss, you can chime in on this as well, because this is I would say this is more of a district success here. Is in early December, our Standard & Poor's upgraded the district credit rating from AA to AA+. And that's a big deal. And it says a lot, I think, about the way that we're managing the entire district financially. I think it says a lot about our leadership. I think it says a lot about the way that we manage the programs. And we have refunded how much, sir?
Total. Sale of refund over $1 billion.
Yeah.
So this was not just a construction program, it was LACCD that they ordered and gave away to the
way. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
It's still a bond program.
Bond. Oh, so it was just a bond
yes.
program.
Yes. And it was a December sale, that's correct.
Thank you.
What does refund mean?
Refinance.
So, translation is the taxpayer pays a lower dollar. It's incremental with 600 $60 billion tax base, that counts. Every little percentage counts, isn't it? So it's good news for the taxpayer and good news for the district. It was an incredibly successful bond sale, and their ratings, I think in part, in having made the presentation with our team to Standard & Poor's and to Moody's, they point out very specifically the fiscal prudence, the leadership of the district, in particular the last 3 years since the transition in the program management program, and the board's policy of holding to a minimum of 10% the balance reserve, right, is healthy. And that was met with some resistance, I understand, initially, but now it is seen as obviously prudent and it helped us.
So this, in fact, is the third order. In addition to the two KMPG audits, have the effect of an order by Standard & Poor's to be able to.
Certainly, an assessment of the fiscal health of the district overall, its leadership, and also how we're expending the sale and use of the bonds today.
Is there a rate between the district and the bond program?
There is.
There is. Yes.
So, as you mean, we were pretty excited about it.
Very good.
I'm going to hit a couple highlights of 2014. I'll go through that very quickly. We had six audits in 2014 from various organizations. It's not just KPMG that looks at our stuff. In fact, the State Controller's Office was down again. We've had some internal audits and many others. We are probably the most audited program we've ever been on, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think it helps with transparency and helps to build confidence when people look at it. The only thing I worry about is the staff time associated with it. It's taken away from the main thing. We do have to put quite a bit of staff time into each one of these audits to satisfy them, but the feedback has been very, very positive from all of them. Yes, sir.
When I first joined this board 100 years ago, the State Controller was very unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we, for lack of better terms, kicked a butt on a couple things when they came back down to look at what we had done in the past, and they had made some findings and some opinions. And in fact, the Attorney General came back and backed us on our opinions. Then in addition, they came down this year under some kind of weird guise of looking at a project, a singular project. But what in fact that did was open our books back up to them. And they were able to examine our program again. And by all accounts, and I have to knock on wood because the final report is not out, but we did a very, very, very good job.
So their attitude is much better than that?
Yes. Yes.
In the person of the state or the person who holds that seat today, the same one that held that seat in the early days?
It's still John Chung?
John Chung.
Yeah. We awarded 25 design and construction procurements for about $150 million. We closed and certified 65 projects with DSA. That's a big, okay, Dan gets it because this is a, it's not uncommon to have projects sitting out there 10 plus years that are not certified. We inherited a lot of legacy projects that were out there. And you can imagine what the economy has done to the construction business over the last 7 years. A lot of people have gone out of business, a lot of people disappeared. So if you're looking for a laboratory record test report that you might not have one piece of paper in addition to the other 14,000 pieces of paper, and you don't have it, you don't get certification. So it's a monumental effort to get it. And this program is the best I've ever seen. We have, and I asked the Department of State Architecture, the chief architect, Chet Whittem. I talked to him about it. I said, well, how are we doing, Chet? And he said, you guys are by far the best in the state. At any level, by the way, K-12 or higher ed. And I said, can I quote you on that check if I'm going to? And he said, yes. So it was that's a real quote. He said, we are the best at it. So very, very proud of that. We processed over $225 million in vendor payments. We closed out another 26 projects to get this at substantial completion. Then we go into the DSA certification portion. And well, the central component is the strategic execution plan that you can hear me talk about. It's in your handouts, if I'm not mistaken, right? Okay, which defines the prioritized projects with budgets and schedules to close out the program. Something we didn't have before. And the concern there was that we wanted to align the expectations with reality. There was a lot of folks that were probably, we were gonna put a bow on this program and walk away, and they were gonna be standing there waiting for the building to be built still. So we had to go back, align those. We brought in each college. They went through a process themselves of prioritizing what they were gonna have built with the money that they had left. And we made everybody come clean, if you will, and did a very, very deep dive in all the accounting systems and found all the money, all the squirrel nuts, anything that was hidden, pulled it back out and told them what they really had. So at this point in time, I would say this is the clearest that we've ever been with respect to what we're actually going to get built. And as I said, not everybody was happy about it, but at least they know what reality is, and we never lied.
Were there some significant projects at any given campus that they thought they were going to get them?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, several campuses suffered through this exercise when they thought they had a lot more money than they actually had. Trey was one that took a really big hit.
West LAC?
I'm sorry?
West LAC?
They took a hit with the, for them, I guess it's a big hit. I'm just thinking about the amount of money. It wasn't as bad as some of the others. City was a difficult one, and they're frankly still not through figuring out exactly how they want to end this thing. So we were trying to toe the line and hold it as close as we can with these plans, but we're also being flexible if they come up with a better idea. But we really, really are trying to hold it to where we are. Yes, sir.
Jim, please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm recalling that where we began, where we end, what we thought we would build, by the time we get to completion, we'll be about 92%?
Yes.
Is that a fair number?
Yes, I think that's a great number.
So about 8% of projects that were imagined through a variety of circumstances will not be completed in this cycle. But 92% hit rate is not too bad.
And when we did that study, the chancellor asked for that study, and we completed it. And to be quite honest with you, I was kind of surprised. I thought we were going to go a lot shorter than that. We dug back through, starting with the initial bonds, and went all the way through. So it's, in my opinion, it's a good news story. Now, I just want to focus a little bit on this campus, because you saw some of the things that are out there.
We have just focused on the construction projects that are funded by Project J. Okay. Bond J. Do you think you would have come up with the same 8% or a different number?
I wouldn't want to speculate on that. I would have to do the analysis first to give you an answer. Hopefully you guys see the Softy building. It's a big $36 million building. The Cox building, Cox Theater upgrade, math and sciences. And what's most impressive to me right now is the lack of a big giant Sarajevo-like structure that was on this campus for a number of years, a big steel skeleton that really made a beautiful campus look terrible. And we were able to take that down in December. And hopefully you saw some just pieces of iron left and maybe some concrete pad be chopped up, but bringing that thing down was a big deal. And that was a wrestling match with the state to get it down, but we finally got there. Yes, sir. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And this is just as some Southwest trivia. This campus is about as built out as we can get. There's a few things that we could do. I mean, if we had additional funding here, where I would look at modernizing or changing some of the structures that already sit here. But this particular campus has fault lines running all over it and all through it. So we had to be very, very careful about where we build things. And going forward, there's really no other place to build on here. So we have to look at upgrading and modernization as our next step, or possibly taking down some of the current structures and putting in new ones. But I believe that, I gotta think, Lindy, I'm not sure if you would know, I bet we've touched every building on this campus, this particular one.
Took the tour.
Oh, did you? Okay, yeah. You probably know more about it than I do, Ellie, because you just got the tour. And then I think we talked about this one, but the Pierce College, there was this awful project called North Mall that's been sitting out there. What, not yet? Well, here, listen, what we do have, this is the good part of it, is it's sitting there with a big ugly fence around it for a number of years. So we've got it back on track and ready to go. So we have a contractor, we have Belfort Beatty, somebody that we had not done work with before, but which is a very large international firm based out of the UK, but they own many, many subsidiaries. So it gives me a lot of confidence that we'll get good quality work out of them. And the people that have worked with them before have had really good experience. And this is just part of the trend that we're seeing in our bidding and the people that are showing up. In the past, oftentimes we got the C minus, D plus, E, F expelled contractors, and now we're getting the A's and the B pluses of the world looking at our work. And that's a great thing. We'll get a much better quality. It should drive the mitigation costs down and make it a better experience for everybody. And in addition to that, we're still looking for a lot of small contractors. We're trying to bring them in to do work for us, some of the local contractors. So we'll be having a boot camp at Trade Tech every Wednesday from February 11th through March 25th. And a lot of that will have to do with how to do business with the district. People can get themselves into trouble very quickly working for public agencies. We're not particularly flexible in the way we contract to do things. So we come in, we help teach them, gear them up. It's something I've done over at LAUSD, and we really helped a lot of companies become successful, and they were really good strategic partners in the small We're doing it. It's a couple of different things. One is we want people to have the opportunity to work with us, and two, we want to bring. I talk a lot about those big sophisticated contractors that I like dealing with because they know what they're doing. Well, we want to get some of the maybe smaller contractors up to speed and let them come in and have experience with the public agency and help guide them through it. It's a little more work for us.
Yes, sir.
It's riskier. But that's why we have to guide them sometimes and help them out. And there's
more expensive.
For us?
Yeah, you're doing extra cost. How many costs?
The alternative is to be accused of not helping the small.
That's why I understand what you're doing. Thank you.
Although there are some real efficiencies in hiring contractors that were appropriately scaled.
Absolutely.
And to the extent we have small projects, sometimes we turn them for somebody like that. It's just expensive just because of who they are.
Yeah.
And if you can get a really qualified, smaller guy and teach him how to deal with the bureaucracy, you may be substantially better.
Dan's exactly right. And be quite honest. Turner, Henson, Phelps, McCarthy, et cetera, aren't going to look at anything less than $30 million, really. I mean, so when we have these $3 to $5 million jobs, we need those guys to do good work for us. And we want to make sure that they get trouble. We also have a goal that we've set of 30% with small contractors, with small businesses. And it's something we take very seriously. And we're tracking quite a bit higher than that right now. Which is worth it. Well, Terry reminded me we won another award, but what is Program of the Year award?
Program of the Year
for CMA. For the Construction Management Association of America. So we'll be accepting that in March, I believe. And so I've got to lose about 30 pounds getting my tux, but we're happy to have it. And to be quite honest, we made a conscious effort to stay a little bit out of the public light the last few years with respect to the awards and the ceremonies, and certainly not patting ourselves on the back, but they're starting to come whether we want them or not. So we've got a few other awards. Some of the people on our program are being individually recognized. One of my folks just got a 40 under 40 award for California for construction executives. And they're coming pretty very expected. She's on the rubber chicken circuit now, and I think we're all proud of what we're doing and where we've come from. And
is it time for the LA Times show?
But they won't talk to us. That's my boss's job. That's above my pay grade, and he's been working pretty hard. And now everybody's favorite portion is the challenge projects. The first one we'll start off with is the city. It's a Clausen Hall project. This is one where we have had, I think this is our third contractor on this particular job, and they, first one BK, second one wasn't even licensed in California. Now we're in it with a surety. The surety took over after the first one BK, and they brought in a contractor. The good news is the progress is great. The bad news is this thing can't get out its own way. I'm pretty sure we've built it on some kind of Viking burial ground, and it's a big curse. Multiple structural issues, and it's 2 years behind schedule. But believe it or not, I think we should, and you know, this changes from day to day, but I'd like to say we'll be done in about a month.
How does somebody not watch California get to be on a program?
Because it was the sureties, they brought in a contractor called Dick Construction, right, or DCK, big company out of Pittsburgh. And they had a deal with the surety, you know, because there's only a couple sureties left in the world. Everybody went out of business years ago, or they consolidated. And so the surety brought them in, they wanted to go to California to do the work. They started doing the work. And then we need the paperwork, we need all the stuff associated with it. And somebody forgot their license. Yeah, so they were quickly removed from the project. So cease and desist, get out of here, and we had the surety bring in another contractor. But this one's just been a ball of hate. We'll be glad to have it done. A few of you will remember my parking structure story from last time, but the gist of it is we have an absolutely beautiful new parking structure out of Valley Monarch. The only problem is we had some deflection in the beams, which brought it below the 7-foot code requirement to about 6'11¼". So I think we're 3/4 or 5/8 off to begin with. So we went through and then chipped out, went working with DSA, went through, chipped out below it, and then put some filler back in. It's like a leveling compound almost. Put that back in to gain our extra 3/4 or 5/8 or whatever it be. Well, that stuff that we put in that leveling never cured. So up to what we need, I think we need a 5,000 PSI or something like that. We could only get 3,500 out of this. We had the manufacturer out, we had the installer out, we had every concrete expert in the world out to look at this thing, and nobody could get it. So we changed projects, we went back to DSA, so this other product. Well, we did the reinstall again and we still can't get the strength. But here's the good news is that we can't get the strength right now, meaning, you know, the brake strength, but we think in 30 days it's going to cure and we're not going to have a problem with it. We just have to talk DSA and let us do it. So ultimately, it'll get there, it's just not there right now. And that's the only thing that's preventing this thing from being fully occupied. So we have this beautiful large structure there. And at 5/8 of an inch, it's been going on for about 6 weeks.
Is this only in one place, or is it
It's several parts where those beams deflected throughout it. But we have we already have 1,000 spaces open. I mean, it's a big parking garage. It's just parts of it that we have cordoned off until we can get the strength we want.
We're just down to one spot that we're waiting to cure. All the other spots have actually tested to 5,000 PSI, so we're making progress.
We actually covered all of those spots.
Well, that's good news. I missed my update yesterday. This one, I don't think it's a trouble project. I think it's pretty good news. This is the East Student Success Retention Center over at East LA campus. It's a 109,000 square foot building, $85 million. LEED certified. We're going to be about 2 months behind what we originally thought on the schedule. And that was due to some problems we had on a concrete pour on the fourth floor on the decking and in some of the inspections for the shop welding for the atrium, for the structure. But I think we're a couple months off on it. Yeah, I would love to be on time, but this is going to be a beautiful building we've done. And then everybody's favorite is the Mission Media Arts Center. And this is a beauty. We had a contractor back in 2011 who walked away and went bankrupt, whatever you want to call it. The surety then took over. The insurance company took over and brought in another general contractor. But before they went back to work, we did a very, very thorough inspection of the work that the former contractor had done and found tremendous amount of deficiencies, structural deficiencies. Bad connections on the steel, issues with concrete, etc. We then had to go back, with the help of DSA, go back and deconstruct the building in many cases, take the concrete out, look at how they tied in the bar, look at how they've done the connections, etc. And as I said, we found an enormous amount of deficiencies. That then started a process where we would go floor by floor, identify the deficiencies, design a fix, the architect would design a fix, we would then take it to DSA, DSA would approve it. We are on the last two packages, if you will, to get the same fix where we can start doing work again. So there's progress being made, but it's just been a labor, and it's been a real mess, and we'll probably be fighting for about this one for years with the surety, but we'll be doing some more work coming up. And the real scary part here is we have about 1.9 million in state funds that are at stake here if we don't reach a certain completion by a certain date. So we're pushing extremely hard to at least get that amount of money into place so that we can collect our 1.9 million in the state. That completion date currently is the summer of 2016. So about a year and a half. But that's the mission in the arts, and that's the one the committee's asked me to keep on here and to give the regular updates to each one of the meetings. And I think that concludes my construction update. Sir, would you like to?
Sure. Do I need a microphone?
Yep.
Okay, thanks. Well, let me build on some of the wonderful things here. I'll be mindful of our time good here. Let me give you some high-level views and thoughts. First, what I wanted to do was share and introduce that we have in here Dr. Linda Rhodes. She's the president here at LA Southwest College. She's new to our district. She is joined our team here in August of this past year. She's doing a marvelous job in embracing this college and moving forward. She is from the Smoke community, so knows it well. And I tell you, when you pull up to this institution, I've had the great fortune now of being here twice this month. This stand is a physical as well as a sort of metaphorical bastion of hope and opportunity. This college here, I hope you like what you're seeing. It's taking shape. That middle choir gym is absolutely fabulous. We have that facility. And I think it's really starting to feel and look like it will be marvelous place to study and to learn. As related to this particular report, I want to make you aware that Mr. O'Reilly and I meet weekly on these things. So what he is sharing as a report and the status and whatnot is something that we pay a lot of attention to. We want to ensure that we deliver highest quality product, ensuring the resources that the public has given us are supported in an appropriate fashion. And those areas that need to be redressed, we will. Whatever conditions we have, we own them, and we improve upon them. And someone mentioned earlier about the LA Times and whatnot, and when I had the opportunity to visit with them a couple of months back, I went on and on about the Webby Network, and it's been widely recognized now. It's an incredible process improvements, some project improvements, delivery method improvements, better systems, better delivery, and ultimately how it's impacting the learning of students. Oh yeah, it's not for students, isn't it? Sometimes we lose sight, lose sight of what this is all for. So,
did you have to be with the two writers?
I met with the publisher. I met with the publisher.
But not with the writer?
No, and we are forthcoming editorial board discussion, yet to be frank, but this is a good news story. They were quite as interested, for whatever reason. Pretty good news, but I suspect that at some point they will. When this story continues to unfold, it is in fact very good news in stark contrast to what we have experienced before. And just the district in general finds itself in the best fiscal health that we have in 5 years, which is very, very good news. We are hiring again, both at the administrative, classified, and faculty level. And typically, you can tell the health of organization when the faculty is hired. That's all. That's one academic year, you may have seen some of the advertisement in the LA Times, we're going to hire up to, we think, when we expect to be retirements, attrition, normal attrition, 157 full-time tenure track faculty across all nine campuses.
So you'd be the same number total?
No.
We're going to move to you, you're going to move up?
Yeah, about half of that number is plus.
Okay.
So about half attrition, half is plus. So that's significant. We are 60% full-time faculty, 40% otherwise, and we're moving towards our goal of 75% full-time tenure track tenure faculty. So that's very, very good. It's the best financial position we've been in because of the state's investment, the reinvestment in education. It's very good news. We visited a whole team of statewide folks this last weekend for our annual capital days, if you will, in which we deconstructed the governor's initial proposal for the state, and in turn, the California Community College proposal. And it's very good. It adds about $1 billion into the system. If it were to remain about $600 million ongoing, it adds 8% roughly of the overall community college budget. And that translates to us very nicely. What it means for us is increased capacity to serve more students, increased capacity to provide support services while they're here, and to improve the disproportionate success rates I mentioned earlier. So very good news for us, if it holds. The other segments, be it social services, health, other segments of higher education, corrections, the big pots of funding, they're not fair as well, frankly, from the standpoint of improved percentage. But we view this as, you know, redressing historical underfunding and historical neglect. So we were not apologetic about the funding that the governor's proposing and supporting it wholeheartedly. So as we move forward, we expect to have the May revision that the governor will provide us, and we expect a lot of these initial investments to hold. And if that holds through the July 1st signature, statutory signature time, that will be just fine. So what it means for us is an improvement of capacity. I wanted to point out very clearly that we are at a place where we can grow as a district. Sometimes it is. We can grow because we have resources to put in to not just hire faculty, but to allow them to teach the courses that allow more students to enroll. We're at that place. That's very good. That's a sharp contrast to the previous 5 years where we lost 20,000 full-time equivalent students. That is a massive amount of students. When you consider that 70% of our students are part-time, that could easily translate to 40,000 to 45,000 students headcount gone from our system. Well, we're now restoring them back, getting those enrollments to come up. And the good news is, during the greatest recession of California since the Great Depression, this program, the one that you oversee, GUIDE, was its own local economic development stimulus package. Who did this? 30,000 construction jobs. Who else can say that through this voter-approved bond program? It's very good news that it's not told to the or we tell it, we're sort of blue in the face, but you need to help us, if you don't mind, share this wonderful local economic program. During the greatest recession, we were a fact opportunity, really a nod to the voters for that. So we have capacity. We have set a 4.75% growth target for this year. We enrolled 136,000 students in the fall. We're in winter session right now. We're in our penultimate week next week to begin our spring semester in earnest, February the 9th. So it's quiet now, but they'll be roaring back in just a few weeks all across our minor colleges. So the
4.65% that you stated, is that projected student?
Yes. Yes.
So you have projections that will move back to the water?
Absolutely.
Will they use right away?
No, these are fall of 15. We're hiring right now, we're posting right now for a new 2015-16 academic year. So right now we have a deployment of faculty now, we have about 4,000 full-time instructors.
Your academic year begins in June?
No, in September. Well, yes, the formal academic year begins in September, but I think it's really important to notice, and this is where the powers and wonderful attributes of this particular district. I was looking at the academic cycle, and we offer courses essentially 47, 48 weeks out of 52. The wonderful 16-week semesters, buttressed by this winter session, 5 weeks, and three, four different long, 4, 6, 8, 10-week summer programs. I mean, we're always in session, which makes it difficult to build, right, sometimes. But in other words, we don't leave academic periods empty. However, we can use better efficiency. In our average class load right now is 32 to 37, depending on college. That's the average class size. We can use better academic periods in the afternoon, on Friday evenings, and on weekends, and through distance education, online education. So we have, that's the point. We have capacity to grow. Now we're going to have instructors and curriculum so that they can offer the classes. The tragic truth is, though, that when the economy improves, our enrollments go down. Yeah. People are working. So when the state is capable of giving more because the economy is improving, enrollments plummet throughout the state. And we're holding state and federal funding. Holding. Sliver to your group work to the foundations for student support. But the operations.
Despite that, you are projecting growth
yes.
in student support.
Yes. That's the goal. Hey, last year we hit. With Dr. Valera's leadership and the college presidents and instructional program 3.63. So we're ambitious and we set our growth target at that and we're going to have that. So let me conclude this by saying that the discussion of the future bond is not yet one that has been formalized with the board. Right now, with the support of Mr. O'Reilly and his wonderful crew and our program manager, what we're trying to do is to demonstrate need. And I've asked that Mr. O'Reilly to categorize it in three categories. Infrastructure, in other words, take a look at the guts. When you tell me this is on the campus, it's on multiple faults, that keeps me up at night, given that we're in Southern California. So infrastructure, to look at the things, you know, when the LA, UCLA 30-inch water pipe that was put in 1918 or something, spewed millions of gallons of water, that's the stuff that keeps us up. Because that could happen at a campus near you. And that's, we want to make sure we take care of the infrastructure, roadways, the things that we can't see. The other piece is modernization. The vast majority of the $6 billion that we would spend is in fact on modernization, improving existing investments and previous investments from the public. And the last piece is new construction, new facilities that in fact are driven by the curriculum that our faculty is writing, driving, not just for university transfer, but for employer needs. That is, we do not want to design facilities that are for 20th century renters. We're in the 21st century. So being able to anticipate the 50-year life cycle, classrooms that are in fact like this, flexible in space, that incorporate technology, natural lighting, if you will, are characteristics of our classrooms that we'll be designing and are designing throughout the district. So our responsibility now is to assess need throughout. And as I looked at the full range of the program, and as I walked the campus, as I talked to our facilities executives and others, there's still a tremendous need that is out there because the three bonds are helping to redress previous needs. As we look forward to maybe some additional. The board has not asked for a number, and I've asked whether they should do this or not. There is an election this March. There will be at least three members of the trustees who will be joining us, and then we'll be committed after a fall preliminary discussion to resurrect that conversation from July or so, summer, when we have our summer retreat. So that we bring fold in the new folks to say, you know, it's your authority, your senior authority to authorize a bond, not staff. Your responsibility, our responsibility is to say, if we were to do this, here's the scope, here's the need, here's the impact. And we'll be prepared to do that.
Isn't the state, the agency that wishes to bond, what they ask for it, the state, or the construction bonds, state bonds?
Oh, the state bond, well, you know, there's some.
Well, what bond are you talking about?
I'm talking about a local bond.
Okay, so it's a different
Yeah, the state bond may or may not resurrect itself in 2016. There's not been a state bond since 2006. The current discussion, both on the Assembly and Senate side, is to place in 2016, and the legislation now to help enact that $9 billion bond. So imagine this one with three successful local bonds almost matches the state bond. Yeah, but it's not on the ballot yet.
It's a state bond.
No. This is capital facilities. Remember, K-12 and community colleges are the only local jurisdictions that can tax the local residents for capital bonds. The University of California and the California State University, the other two big segments, do not have this capacity, this ability within the code, education code, government code to do that. So they rely on private support, philanthropic support, or capital bonds in the state to fund the projects. So they are desperately wanting, after 10 years now, from 2016, this to pass. The facilities community is pushing in. But in 2014, when many of us were trying to help with that, Mr. Governor was very clear. I want my high-speed rail, I want my water bond. Nothing else gets in the way. And I mean, this month, nothing gets in the way. It was very good. Well, we got ready, So the goal is 2016. So that's a capital bond. There's not been one since 2006. So the backfill for those districts that can't pass bonds, or for those districts that are coming near the end, they work with the chancellor's office. They have their projects in line. We have a few out there in line, but we've had to deal with this locally. If we waited for the state to build out our facilities, we would be waiting a very long time. It was a 7-year backlog, but I'm not sure what it is now. So, maybe I'll end there. Are there any questions?
Questions.
Yeah, please.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Did you say 27 or 37 was the average teacher load? Question load.
Oh, it depends on the college. The low is 31, 32.
And across the district?
Well, across the district is about 35, 36, average.
It's 33 to 37, is what you said.
Yeah, just a range. There are some colleges that are a little bit lower, but it's well over the district. The mid-30s is our average class size.
The second question, we meet weekly with Jim.
Yes.
How long are your meetings?
As long as they need to be.
How long is the longest meeting then? A whole day?
A couple of hours?
Okay.
Because
he has a lot of detail. They both have a lot of detail.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm on a need-to-know basis, so Jim told me what I need to know, and I asked lots of questions, and I have a strong interest in this area. And I like what we're doing because how it impacts learning. And we have such a good story to tell, and part of my role is to tell that story. So now it's in between. We communicate as we need, but this is our fixed standing meeting where we go over these documents. And so I can be a communicator, as Jim is, to the board, so they can continue to provide the policy direction that allow us to execute the actual plan.
And something that the Chancellor's done too, Elliot, that I think we should all acknowledge, and I think it's near and dear to my heart, is that he's asking questions about how we're going to upkeep these buildings out in the building, and how we're going to maintain them, and what's the best way to do that. So that's something else that we're looking at on a grander scale, but that's something not everybody does. Once they get the building out, they forget about it, they don't touch it, and things start breaking. So I appreciate his support in that.
Wasn't there a commitment made by the board to spend a certain portion every year on continuing maintenance?
Yes, there is. In addition to this, last year, and then this last year was actually scheduled maintenance and deferred maintenance fund given to the colleges. And the state gave us flexibility for that and more equipment. So we crossed over back out to the colleges, and we've done so. In addition to that, the board, through the board rule, has a percentage that they contribute towards our own scheduled maintenance. Before last year, it had been 5-6 years before the state gave us scheduled maintenance. So the board was prudent. And doing just what you described.
It is. At one point, getting back to hiring
I had heard that one of our problems was we had students who had a particular program to go through in a number of years and had obviously sequential classes that they had to take, but they weren't being offered, and so they couldn't either stay at their campus or they just couldn't keep moving towards their peer review. Are we getting back to not having that?
Yes, yes. And that occurrence, by the way, that sort of on-ramp, off-ramp, stopping out, was statewide with the divestment in public education. The way we contracted enrollment was by not offering the sections.
Yeah, that was.
If you can't pay for the sections, you can't offer them. There are no seats in the class, which means some of those classes, we paid, I'm sure this district as well, wasn't here during that time, because we're now in growth mode. During that time, we try to be sensitive to the capstone courses, the courses that students needed the most. But in some cases, entry-level courses, the ones that get filled the most, in English and math, reading, we couldn't offer enough sections of all four. And we cut out a lot of sections and opportunities for concurrent enrollment, which is high school students coming, and now we're opening that back up again. So we've gone to the five-year goal. Yes?
No, my apologies. I didn't mean to.
No, good to meet you. Good to meet you.
Thank you. Very impressive to meet you.
Thank you.
I just have a responsibility to tell you that you just that your quorum is gone.
Yes.
So
is that does that matter higher?
No, I don't think so. I just
we're also over our time limit, and unless there is old business or new business that anybody can think about. Okay, then the chancellor said you would stay here if you had other questions. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you both.